Vaiguru ji ka khalsa,
Vaiguru ji ki
fateh. Welcome everybody to episode 11 of Sikh Parenting with me, Sikh Mum Navroot Kaur.
And me, Sikh Dad Gurpreet Singh. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. It's great to be back.
It's been an extremely trying time, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think things are changing now, and we've all had a real period of a reflection on what normal life actually is as we contemplate going back to normal life. And we've had these discussions at home, and it's been quite interesting, hasn't it?
Yeah, really, really interesting. I'm doing things and practices that I don't know, I think I ever would have done with the kids and without the kids. I got myself a coach. I've been dealing with past traumas. I've been doing more yoga than I've ever done, and I've always enjoyed a lot of yoga. So I've been exercising. I bet everybody's exercising because all the gym gear is sold out everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, even my old dumbbells came out, and they're worth something now.
Yeah, but it is a very, very trying time, and this is a lifestyle and parenting podcast. So to all the parents out there who are at home, homeschooling, doing your best, we just want to say that we are with you and you can get through it. There's loads of resources and we need to pull together and rely on each other, right?
Absolutely.
To get through this really, really trying time. And if you have chosen to continue to keep your kids out of school like we have, there are lots of resources that I have pulled together through other mums and through certain subscriptions that I have and the school, which I'm happy to share. So just get in contact if you do need anything. But moving on to our episode, which is a really special one for me, particularly.
And me.
Oh, and you, I'm sorry, for both of us. Our guest today is someone very important to Sikh Dad and I. She's impacted hundreds of women and men's lives through, in my opinion, two of the most profound virtues that she has, which is her love and her compassion. Her passion for pregnancy led her to work with babies, teaching baby massage to parents and carers one-to-one and in groups. Her work as a doula in all stages of pregnancy is at the highest level, using her qualifications and experiences to teach hypnobirthing, which is amazing. Her seva, which is her selfless service at local hospitals, is, you know, second to none. She runs free walk and talk sessions for local community, and she is not stopping there. And I don't expect her to either because of the way she is. Now, our guest is continuing her personal development and training as a counsellor, which means that she has to deal with lots of her own kind of past traumas to be able to support other people, which a lot of people would not really do or do that self-work. So it's amazing. But I would like to say that today's guest has helped my pregnancy journey for over 6 years now, present for me in mind, body and soul for three of my pregnancies. She started as a little Google search by Sikh Dad to find me someone to give me a pregnancy massage has led to a profound friendship and valuable sister in my life. She has been there for us in ups and downs, has trained my mindset to achieve absolutely amazing birthing experiences, and empowered Sikh Dad and I to battle against healthcare professionals for the births and the desires that we've wanted for us and our children. It is from the deepest part of my heart that I welcome today friend, doula, sister, mother, wife, massage therapist, and entrepreneur and founder of A Mother and Bump, our very own Natalie. Welcome, Natalie.
Okay. Yay.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's what an introduction. Thank you so much.
I mean it, every single word of it, even though I feel like I haven't done you justice.
Oh gosh, no, that was really, you know, an amazing introduction, because, you know, it's exactly what I want to do in the work that I'm doing, you know, to make a difference. So the fact that you've sort of said that's happened, that, yeah, really feels fills my heart. So,
Natalie, a lot of our listeners, especially in the Asian community, because in the South Asian community, because it's not really, although I know through education that you've given me, is actually a done thing, but not known with this particular word, the word doula. What is a doula and how did you come into this career path?
Okay, so the word doula is actually a Greek word and it means servant to the mother. It's a bit of an odd word, to be honest. It's not really descriptive, is it? You know, lots of people don't quite understand what it means. But it actually means trained birthing companion,
right.
Someone that's professionally taken training. But I tend to think that we've had doulas around us forever. In families, you know, that would have been the wise woman in your, you know, your village. It could have been your aunts, as in your case, Nav, your sister. So it's someone that's experienced in birth or has a confidence around birth that can support someone physically and emotionally. And that's essentially what we do. We're not trained medically, although we understand a lot of the terminology. But we are there really to serve the mum, to be there, and for dad too. But really our job is to be completely there, handed over in service to the mother, protecting her emotionally and physically.
Wow. And how long have you been doing it? How did you come in? What made you kind of fall into or want to study this and do this as a living?
Well, I originally started off through my own pregnancy, of course. A lot of times when you're inspired to do things, it's through your own personal journey.
Right.
I didn't have the most enjoyable pregnancy. And in that time period, you know, there wasn't now this hypnobirthing. There's quite a lot out there. The market's quite saturated in antenatal private care. At that time, it was more NCT, which was more aimed at sort of white middle class women. So that didn't really fit me. And at that time, hospitals weren't really doing any antenatal type of care or anything like that. So there was nowhere that I had any support in that sense. I also developed really severe morning. We call it morning sickness, but it wasn't. It was what Kate Middleton had, where you're sick literally morning from the morning right the way to the evening.
Right.
And that was quite isolating and lonely. And so I didn't have anyone really to share any of these feelings with. So I kept them to myself. And then I discovered after the pregnancy that I wanted to get into massage-based work. And had an idea that I would market my massage business towards the pregnant market and really work with women. I wanted to work with them for the first trimester because I felt really lonely and had lots of anxiety. I'd also suffered a miscarriage before, so I had a lot of anxiety around the early part of pregnancy. And there just wasn't any space. There was no one holding space for women to discuss these feelings and so on. So long story short, I got into my pregnancy massage based work, started to work with women to keep them relaxed in their early labour so that when they went into hospital, they were fully established and then they would have better labour. So that's really how I started. And then my massage continuous training, which was with Susan Yates, who's an amazing teacher, I met a doula. And she said, well, you're doing part of the work, you're just not attending birth. So, you know, that was just, it was just like a natural, like, wow, that's the next step. And so 2009, I started my training with Nurturing Birth and, yeah, never looked back really. It just, yeah, started there.
And what do you, why do you feel it's important to have a doula? Like, so... and who would be the ideal kind of mother, or is there an ideal kind of pregnant woman who would need a doula?
I think all women should have a doula personally. I think that we should be free.
Yeah.
Free in every hospital. Yeah, just because there's nothing quite like, I mean, of course, fathers definitely need to be there. They're definitely, they're doulas too, you know. it's anyone that can be physically there and emotionally there to support the mum. But there is something about having that energy in the room of an experienced person that is independent of a hospital environment, that can advocate for you, that can tell you information that you need, that can prepare you antenatally. A lot of the time, especially first-time parents, they have no idea what journey they're about to embark on. They have no idea of what questions to ask. So being that mother, because that's essentially what we are, we're like surrogate mums, you know, in that antenatal phase, we're working with parents, giving them all the information so they can make informed choices for themselves. A lot of the time, parents don't know they've got choices. They just think that they've got to follow hospital protocols, and that's not always the truth. That's not always the case. So preparation is really, really important. But being at the birth, you know, we reduce cesarean rates by 25%, 8% vaginal births and more likely to happen spontaneously. And just we just help. I always say we're like the adrenaline sponge in the room. We keep everything very, very calm.
Right.
And because we see birth and we know it's normal, it's a normal function, and every woman is capable of giving birth. And of course, there's times that we need medical support. But, you know, there's something about having the energy and the presence of someone that's just confident in your body that you then can get into your primitive state to birth your baby. You can then relax into the energy that you have within you to birth your baby, which is normal, right? It's normal to you know, it's a normal physiological act. I believe that every woman should have a doula.
I think I really agree with what you said, because you know, you mentioned like the father's role, and you know, for a man being there as well, you can feel quite helpless at times and isolated because you can't really do anything. But I think you really touched on it, because you said being physically and emotionally present, and that makes a real big difference. And also what you touched on as well is having being a first-time parent, like many people listening to this as well, it's like, you know, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack when you're looking for information on what to do, and you can just be overloaded with as well on the other side. So having someone, you know, obviously we had your support from our second child onwards, so having that from the beginning would have, you know, would have been amazing. So I totally get what you're saying there.
And I feel that, you know, the proof is in the pudding, because obviously we didn't know you when we had our first child, and we did have quite a traumatic birth with her. We had one doctor coming in and telling us another thing, and another person coming in and telling us something else. And you do really rely on these people and to trust them. And I do trust them. But also I think there's a little bit of kind of maybe advantage taking to some extent, in my own opinion, where they kind of know that you don't understand everything. You don't understand. So what they want to do is easier for them to make happen. Am I getting that over clearly, what I'm trying to say? So for example, you know, I when I was having Mensima, I labored for about 19 hours, and I know that's not a lot compared to some women, but I labored for 2-3 days at home first, and then I was laboring in the hospital because I had strep B from 3 centimeters for 19 hours, and in that time I only hit 8 centimeters, and I was told, you're not going to be able to have this baby naturally. It was only afterwards that I was told, well, you could have had the baby naturally, but this is information that I necessarily wouldn't have known, and no one told me that either while I was in the hospital. Yeah. And which did lead to, you know, I ended up having, you know, an epidural, which I really didn't want. They got someone who had never done it before to do it on me, and she put the needle in 5 times. She had 5 attempts and she got it wrong every single time. And in that time, I had so many contractions while she was trying to do it. And Seat Dad and my sister were holding me so I wouldn't move because of the contraction. while she's trying to do it. And the, you know, the thing that really, really, really hurt me was that when I looked at my paperwork afterwards, when it said epidural attempts, she had only written one on there. And that really upset me, because I thought to myself, I've just been through all of that to end up being told I have to go for an emergency C-section. There were so many things that could have been different if I had the knowledge. That's what I'm trying to get at. And a doula can provide that. To have someone support like that can have that. And I did go into my second pregnancy feeling very empowered. I was being pushed to have another C-section, but I had so much support from yourself and other mothers who had had VBACs, which is a vaginal birth after cesarean section, that, you know, I did fight back. I was able to feel empowered enough to say, no, this is what I want to do. I want to try. Look, if it doesn't work out, I'll go for the C-section, but I need to try. And a lot of women that I speak to through Seek Mum Now, they feel the same way. They don't feel they have the power or the knowledge or the know-how to be able to say, no, this is what I want. And what is your response to those women when they're feeling like that?
Well, it's a human rights issue, actually. I mean, it's important that we get the support that we want. But unfortunately, we often, and I see it all the time, we get white coat syndrome, don't we? We go into a hospital and and we're right to do so. We're trusting what's presented in front of us. But I think what we're not understanding is that there's protocols. And the danger with protocols is it doesn't treat anyone holistically. It doesn't look at anyone as an individual. And the danger you've got there is that we don't all neatly fit into a box. We don't, you know, we don't, there is difference in all of us. So we have to break these things down and examine them, you know, as and when they come up. And I think what the system does, it doesn't give mums the space, because there are, we are short on midwives. You know, we know that the NHS are under pressure. We feel bad, don't we, for taking up more space than we need. But the danger in that is, I mean, we're having babies. I mean, this is about humanity, isn't it? I mean, we're about having healthy children. We want healthy mums and dads at the end of this journey, and so they start off their life happy. So it's about finding your voice and questioning everything. There's nothing wrong with asking a question. You know, there's nothing wrong if you're being presented with information, medical information. It is your right to ask, you know, the evidence of that information, where they're getting these statistics from. They've got to prove with any kind of medical procedure or anything that they're suggesting to you that they've got evidence to back that up, and that you're not just fitting into these boxes, for example, gestational diabetes. That, I know you personally have had that battle, you know. If we don't know the questions to ask, we will be induced. We're straight away. You know, that's already kind of written when you go in there. I know that you personally, but that you're straight away put in that box that, you know, so you have to get educated. It's our duty. And I do think there is responsibility for us to self-educate. It's quite easy in life to think that, you know, we just rock up and give birth and we don't, you know, have to put any work in. If we were getting married, we look at the venue, we research, you know, where we're gonna go on holiday. You know, anything in life, anything that's worth having, you do your homework for.
Yeah. That's such a good analogy that you've used there, where, you know, we are gonna go on holiday, you do research on where you're gonna go, what time the flight's gonna be, you know, what the reviews are like of the place where you're gonna stay, and, you know, and so the same should be, this is probably bigger than that, you know. We should be looking at, you know, who's looking after us, and, you know, what's happening. And sometimes some people don't have those choices because of whatever reasons, but, you know, we should be self-educating, and I think that is the key. And I want to give an example here, because you've touched on the gestational diabetes, which is what I've had with Sahib's pregnancy, my last pregnancy. And I remember, because I was having a massage a month at that time, and you were kind of saying to me, okay, how's it going? I said, look, I'm feeling like this, I'm feeling like that, and you were giving me all this advice. I mean, as closer we were getting to my due date, I was saying, look, they want to induce me, and you were kind of saying, okay, look at this article, look at this article, and, you know, you were talking to me about the questions that I should be asking, and thanks to you kind of giving me that advice throughout, and me going back to my midwife and pushing against what she wanted. And I was really lucky because I had a really good midwife this time, where she did really want what I wanted. And so she was like, okay, you know, they are, I am going to be told that I should be getting you to have an induction because of your age. And again, like you said, because I fit into this box for them, this category of people that they've got. But, you know, thankfully, because we pushed it and we pushed it, we were able to have, you know, we were, you know, our waters were broken, but we weren't put on a chemical drip, thank God, which is what happened with our second pregnancy. And that was, it was fine, but it was still 0 to 100 in terms of our contractions, which was, it's a lot for the body to handle. And so, yeah, that is proof in the pudding there, that, you know, getting that, having that education, having the support of somebody who knows what they're talking about and what your rights are, essentially. But I wanted to talk about postpartum depression, because we've touched on this in many of our podcasts, different ones. The last one also, we did it with Dr. Dojin Kaur, where she talked about postpartum depression as well. And we also spoke to That Sikh Mama, and she talked about her battle with postpartum depression as a South Asian woman who wasn't able to get the support and understanding from, you know, the therapist or nurse that she was given, who was there to look after her, who just happened to be like this middle-aged white lady who did not understand cultural significance and challenges. But in my third pregnancy, you came to give me a massage, and I was talking to you, and you said to me, I can't remember exact words that you used, so I'm just going to kind of remember off the top of my head, but you said something to me. Did you know that postpartum depression can start in pregnancy, when you are pregnant? And I said, no, I did not. And you said to me, I think you need to start talking about what's going on with you. I think you need to talk to Sikh Dad. I think you need to start working a little bit through anything that's coming up for you right now, because it could potentially come up later on after the baby's born. And I am so thankful that you did that for me, because I do feel now, when I reflect, that I did go into quite a dark place, because I had some issues with my in-laws at the time, and it was really holding me back from enjoying my pregnancy, for sure, but it was also keeping me in a very, very low mood at the time. Which put a lot of pressure on the rest of the family, Gurpreet as well, and you were able to detect that. And I wanted to know how, really, and what can one do if they are showing these kinds of signs during pregnancy, and what can they do to prevent potential the potential mind, you know, kind of hitting that low point after having the baby.
Yeah, I mean, antenatal depression in itself is antenatal depression. So not always you've developed antenatal depression are you're necessarily going to have that postnatally, but it raises those markers that could happen if, you know, whatever's going on isn't addressed. Sometimes antenatal depression is hormonal. It could be a trauma. It could be something that's going on in your life. But generally, like you say, it's low mood that you just can't shift out of a certain pattern of thinking and so on. So for postnatal depression, it's the same, low mood, lots of crying, just can't seem to feel enthusiastic about anything. So you would treat them both in the same way, that, you know, the first thing to do is speak to your midwife, speak to your GP, and to try and get some kind of talking therapy, counselling. But the main thing is to act on it, you know,
as soon as you can recognise it, or if a loved one's, you know, nudging you, to try and be open and receptive to that. So, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of antenatal care, because we're talking about, you know, having like antenatal depression, but generally speaking in antenatal care, why is it important? Why is it important to have massage? I mean, I know the answer for myself, and how I feel after having four pregnancies. But if, for example, there was someone listening who is, you know, planning on having a baby or having a first time pregnancy, why would you say to them that massage, hypnobirthing, these kinds of things are important for them?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely important, because just the way we live in society, most women now are working, you know, they're not at home, or they've got older children. So the space to connect in with your pregnancy is not necessarily there. And it's important that we start to connect in with our body, how we feel. It's important to understand how we feel so we can navigate what's coming up for us in our life. So creating the space is really important. Also, cortisol has a negative effect on your baby's development. So if you're hugely stressed, that could, in fact, impact the growth of the placenta. So there's physical, you know, issues that can arise from not creating space to just relax. Also, if you're looking at it in terms of for birth preparation, you know, ultimately the uterus is a muscle. In order, as you know, Nav, to get a baby out, you have to soften into your body. Now, a lot of people live in their head, not that many live in their physical body. And so the antenatal time is really a time to bring the body and mind together. Now, for some mums, that might be the first time ever in their life that they've ever come into their body. And 9 months we think is a long time, but it's not really, when you think about the emotional changes that are going on, the financial changes, you're going to be a pet, you know, there's so much going on. So to have spaces that you can connect in with yourself, that you can navigate, you know, like we said earlier, you know, that there's just so much to work out. So hypnobirthing creates a program. It's an actual antenatal program where you learn about your rights, not just breathing techniques and all the fluffy stuff, but there's actual ways of speaking to health professionals, working out your birth preferences. What type of birth do you want? Have you ever thought about, you know, the type of birth you want? A lot of people don't think that they can choose and have choice. You know, they just think they're going to rock up on the day, give birth, and this is when we end up traumatized, or we look back like you did in your first pregnancy, going, gosh, if I'd known that, I would have made that choice. So if we start to prepare antenatally, we're giving ourselves a chance to get the birth that we want, so that in our memory, on the other side of it, when we've got to be a parent now and get on, we don't carry trauma. We start off the, you know, the parenting journey how we should, which is not scarred or hindered from having more kids, really. So, yeah, antenatal support, doing antenatal classes, anything like that, any birth preparation is just, yeah, gold. It's something that everyone should really do.
And you know, I 100% agree, and because this kind of really does play into, like, our faith, the Sikh faith, because we are told that even before we think of conceiving a child, we should be preparing. Yeah. We should be preparing in our mind through meditation. We should be preparing in through our prayers. And we should also be preparing physically by doing selfless service for others. So I really feel that that kind of really, really does, is really quite parallel to one another and really complements each other. So you just take that to another level where it becomes a bit more physical within the woman and also the partner as well. So he's kind of preparing. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the birth that I had with Sahib, because with every single birth I've had, I know you love birthing stories. Oh. And we've never really talked about what happened with Sahib, but I really want to tell you because I feel that you had such a huge role to play. You may not have been at the birth, but you were there. Like, oh. I feel it. And I really wanted to talk to you about it because the day before he was born, you were at my house and you gave me an amazing massage. And I said to you, look, you'd already advised me to say, you know, get a suite. So to avoid them, you know, inducing you, which was booked in on the Saturday. So this was on the Friday that you had come. And you said, right, what's happening? And I said, I'm going to see the midwife today. And you said, okay, get your Bishop score and see where you are. And I also mentioned to you that the baby's movements had reduced. They were there, but they had reduced. And so you said, just go and get it checked out. So you went off to finish your day, and about an hour later after you left, Gurpreet and I went to the midwife, and we got a Bishop score. Do you remember what the Bishop score was? It was
eight.
It was high. It was high. It was higher than. I know I had texted you when I left there, but I can't remember now.
I don't remember yet.
Yeah, and but the midwife was a little bit worried because although the heart rate and everything when she checked was fine, she said the fact that of your age, again, that box that I fit into, your age and, you know, fourth pregnancy and just some diabetes, she said, just go up to the hospital and get checked out. And I went up to the day assessment. And they said, by the time I had left the midwife, because she'd given me a sweep, obviously it's irritated my my cervix, and I started to contract.
Yeah.
In the car. So when we got there, they must have seen that I was having a bit of a contraction, and they said, she's having a contraction, she needs to go to triage. So I went into delivery sweep to the triage. And I just happened to see the midwife from Gorbin's birth, my third birth there. Yeah. Anyway, she said, let me do a check for you. So she did a check and they kept me on the monitor. They said the movements are absolutely fine. She said, I want you to walk around. I want you to walk around the hospital as much as you can. And we're going to try and get this baby out as naturally as possible, because I just kept on saying, I want a natural birth. I want a natural birth. I just kept on saying that to them. And so we walked around. We must have walked for hours, right? We're walking up and down, up and down. And by that time, my sister had come from Surrey because she was a birthing partner. And then we sat down to have some dinner and the contractions just went. I felt so down, didn't I? Because I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have this induction. And we went back into triage and I said, look, the contractions have stopped. And she said, okay, let me do a sweep. So she did another sweep. She just wanted to have a check, actually, not a sweep. She just wanted to have a check where I was. I was still 3 centimeters at that point. But she said, you know what? We're not going to let you go home now. You're either going to be induced or the baby's just going to have to start by itself, like your contractions. And we stayed in the delivery suite. There's a ward, like a little, it's a room, and they fit 3 beds in there.
Yeah.
I remember there was a guy in the next bed, Natalie. Oh my gosh. He was eating like a kebab or something, and you could hear him like this, and he was burping and farting, and it was so smelly. And obviously we're vegetarian, and we that smell of the kebab was so awful. And he was listening, he was talking to people on his phone. It was so distracting, wasn't it? We were trying to play I Spy. We were trying to do all these things to distract ourselves. We ended up staying the whole night. And every time a doctor or a midwife would come and see us, they would say, we can't give you a delivery suite because we keep getting emergencies coming in. It was crazy, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. They kept on getting women that were further along than us or a lot more a kind of danger stages and things like that. So obviously you're not going to, you know, fight against that. So we just kind of let it go. And, you know, we talk about karma and we talk about these laws of attraction with our kids and ourselves. And I was walking around the next morning, the delivery suite. And I was just walking up round to the midwife station, all the way back, all the way around. And I must have been doing that for four or five times trying to get the contractions to come back. They didn't come back. And one of the midwives asked me, are you okay? I said, oh yeah, I'm just waiting for a room and I'm just waiting there. And she said to me, I'm so sorry about that. I said, you know what, it's fine. I said, I know you guys are under so much pressure. You don't get paid enough. You don't get enough support from this Tory government. I was really, really going at it. And one of the doctors who was sitting there got up and said to me, you are absolutely right. And you are the first mother to ever show us sympathy like that.
Wow.
I know. And I was like, oh, well, I mean it. And I walked off. The next thing I knew, midwife came and said, we've got you a suite.
No.
Crazy.
Thank you.
And anyway, we went in there and then it was just I just feel like, you know, the divine was just with us so much, because the midwife we got, she walked in and we were so happy to see her, weren't we? We were like, hey, she was like, oh my God, I've never had a greeting like this before. And we were like, we're just so happy to do this with you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, let me read for your notes. Or you could tell me. I said, right, I want to have a natural birth. I don't want anyone to touch me. I want to be standing up. I want to be there. I don't want no noise. I want light. I want, low lights. I was saying all these things to her. And she was like, yep, got it. And she was like, you know, so she went to break my waters, and unfortunately she felt someone inside grab her hand. She was like, a little person inside has just grabbed my finger, which means the hand is above the head, which can be dangerous. So she said, what I want you to do is I'm going to go and call a doctor to double check. We're going to do a scan and we're going to get the doctor to do an internal check.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I want you to move around like a crazy person. I want you to jump on that ball. I want you to do your aerobics. I want you to do anything you can to move that hand out of the way.
Yeah.
Because it could mean that the umbilical cord will come out and blah, 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 blah. And so I was, okay, so the next hour I literally was doing grapevine. I was doing all sorts of aerobic movies, moves, and jumping on the ball. When the doctor came, she did a scan. And she said, okay, I can't see a hand, but I'm going to check. She checked, no hand. Oh. So you moved hand. Yeah, I know. So I was like, all these, and every stage I was doing it step by step in my mind, where I was talking to the divine and saying, you're in control. Please just help me with this now. You're in control. Please help me with this now. So first we wanted to get into a suite, and we finally got into one. Then we wanted the hand to be moved. But then I was like, please give us a really, really good midwife. Because as you know, all of my pregnancies, I've always wanted to film them. And I've always had a midwife who's been they've always been great, but they've always stopped me from doing what I've wanted in certain aspects, one of them being wanting to film it. And the next stage was me kind of doing this internal prayer where I was asking for a really good midwife who's going to be connected with me and my desire for this birth. And I got her, Rebecca, bless her. And then the next one was move this hand. So we got this hand moved. Then it was, please don't give me an induction. And then they came in and they said, hands moved. We don't need to induce you, hopefully, if your contractions start after we break your waters. So they broke my waters. The doctor did it because... They couldn't do it the first time, could they? Do you remember? They said that my membrane was really thick.
Yeah.
And I remember that with Ruline, my second as well. And, yeah, so they broke my waters finally. And literally that was at 12:35. And then literally 15 minutes later, contractions started. I think I had two really mild ones, and then it just really developed into really, really quite painful surges. And I got up from the bed and I didn't sit down again, did I?
No.
And I literally was at the end of the bed, and I wanted to talk about this stage, because when we talk about like hypnobirthing and we talk about massage and we want to talk about, you know, bringing the body and the mind together, I really feel like I was able to achieve that, because in all my other pregnancies, my first two especially, I really needed Gurpreet and my sister. I really felt like I've needed them.
Yeah.
But in the last one, not so much. And this one, definitely not. They were just sitting down watching me, to be honest.
Because you're a pro.
and I really, you know, I have heard women talk about this before. And I've talked about it before with my third pregnancy, which I feel that you were just really, really crucial in achieving that as well. But this one was really different because I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. Even the pain, the contractions, me, the only thing I ask Seek Dad to do is, if you feel like I'm losing control, if I'm losing control when it comes to my breath, if you feel like I'm my body movements are not flowing, I'm feeling panicked, anything you're picking up on, you need to just recenter me by saying Vaiguru, which means wonderful God. And he did that a few times, and where towards the end, where I did feel like, oh my God, I'm going to lose it, the pain is whatever, but I just had to keep reminding myself that it's a good pain, it's a welcomed pain. And then I just started pushing by myself, and my sister said, are you pushing? And I said, yeah, I'm pushing. And the midwife, she went and called the midwife, and Rebecca came in, and Rebecca said, she shouldn't be pushing yet. And she said, my sister said, I'm pretty sure she's pushing. And the midwife said to me, are you pushing? And I remember her saying it to me, but I didn't answer because hello, I'm too busy pushing right now. And she was like, listen to this. She came really close to me because I was on the end of the bed, and she leaned over with me. And when she heard me make a certain sound, you know, that kind of sound, that biting down sound, yeah. She was like, oh yeah, she's pushing. Let's get all the bats out. And then she was like, do you want to have the baby like this? I said, yeah, I want to have the baby standing up. So she went and got all the mats and everything that she needed. And she was like, I'm not going to touch you. I'm not going to touch you. You just do whatever you want. And I was like, well, I'm just pushing. And she was like, okay, just do what you want. And she literally did not push me. And then I heard my sister say, can I film? And she said, absolutely. Film it, get that memory for yourselves. And my sister filmed it, and it was amazing. So my waters broke at 12:35. My contraction started at 12:50, and he was born at about 2:30. No, sorry, what was that? No. You can't remember what time he was born.
so engrossed in your story.
No, he was born at 2:25. And because I remember the midwife saying, what's the time, and it was really amazing. And I sat down on the floor, and they said, you pick him up and take him, literally. So like I picked him up, and then
2:34 a.m. I just checked Instagram.
And it was really amazing. And I was up straight away afterwards, you know. It was amazing. I felt like I could go and wash the dishes or something afterwards. I felt so good. I felt alive. I felt amazing. And another thing that you had educated me on is, you know, birthing the placenta naturally. Yes. And she said to me, she said, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't want the injection. I've had it with all the others. I want to do this by myself. And literally I did actually give birth. And I do have massive placentas, don't I? I've been told that by the midwives, that I always have huge placentas. And so I gave birth to the placenta, and she even let us take a video of the placenta. And she said, this is where your baby lived for 9 months. This is where it was getting its food, its nutrients, everything. And it was amazing. And yeah, and I went home the next day, next afternoon. Because, you know, obviously by the time I got cleaned up and everything, they even put me in the Greenwich Birthing Centre in my own little suite there.
Wow.
I didn't even go into a ward. Yeah, because one of the midwives said to me, you know what, don't pay for it. We were thinking of paying for it, £180.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what, don't pay for it. It's not that nice. You know, what they put on the picture of what it looks like, it's not that nice. I was like, oh, okay, it's got all nice little cushions and things. She said, no, it's not. You haven't got anything like that. I was like, okay. She said, but when you've had the baby, just say, can someone go and ask if there's a spare room that I can have? And if there is a spare one, they'll just give it to you. Don't ask, you don't get, right? And it was so nice, because then you know, obviously it was a challenging time. It was 2 weeks before lockdown, so COVID was already on people's lips. People were already talking about it. But I was able to. My in-laws were able to come the next morning. My mum was able to come the next morning. The kids were able to come the next morning, and I was able to have my own space, and it was really nice. And I really feel like it's because. One, the years of experience, but also having the support of yourself in my ear all the time, empowering me and telling me I could do this by myself. I can I have the power within me to have a natural birth that's enjoyable. And now my life as Sikh mum is to tell other mothers that too and empower them. And so it just feels like that energy that you are sharing with people through your work is having a profound effect on coming generation mothers and babies, you know, and their experiences. But that was the birth I had. That literally was what happened. I saw you on that Friday. Can you believe it?
Gosh, I've been dying to hear this birth story for so long. And I've been tempted to ring up before now to find out how it went, but that's incredible. I mean, absolutely amazing. And what you're describing is totally someone that's, you know, of course you've got more confidence than a mum for the first time, you know, the first journey is always more scary, the unknown. But what you've experienced, you've kind of built up that inner wisdom, haven't you? And that knowledge, and you trust in your body. And I think because of the, I know that you work really hard throughout the pregnancy with the gestational diabetes. So you were really in tune with your body a lot before. So that definitely contributed to that. And then I like that when you were in labor, you were having these inner conversations. And in the hypnobirthing world, what you were doing was their affirmations. You're like talking to yourself. You're saying, like, move hand, baby. And we do that a lot in hypnobirthing. And an affirmation doesn't have to be, you know, I hate these scripted ones. I think they should be personal ones. And that's what you're describing there is a complete example of, you know, the mind and body isn't separate at all. And when you have strong visualizations and you're connected to source, whoever that might be, you know, and wherever that power comes from, the body responds because it feels safe. And what you're describing is the primitive. You got into the primitive state where, in fact, you felt safe because you've got your, I know you've got your tag team for birth, you know, your sister and your hubs. So you feel safe. You know that they're there, and that's really important. So you can get on with being primitive. And when those, and like you said, I love the way that you described, you know, when an obstacle would kind of come up, you would meet it there and then, but not worry too far in front. And that's something else that we teach, you know, kind of face what's in front of you there and then. Don't worry about, you know, when people talk about hours of giving birth and so on. Don't worry about that. Be in the moment of what you're in, and then you'll get through to the next moment. So, oh, that story, I'll get goosebumps.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I want to get through to other mums is that you can have this really profound, enjoyable birth, because with I've heard a lot of women say that was the closest I've got to feeling death. I've heard women say that, and I get what they're saying, because I think I probably could feel that in the first pregnant, in my first birth, where it was really traumatic, it was really bad. It felt never ending, but it's such a comparison, the experience I've had, you know, 3 months ago with Sahib, because my breath was my saving grace. I was so connected to my breath that was what my focus was. And that's why I feel like I did not feel the pain of pushing him, of the contractions. And when I did feel like I was losing my concentration on the inhale and the exhale, that's when I did start to go, oh my God, this is painful, I can't do it. And then and that's where I had already prepped Gurpreet to say, when you see this happening to me, you need to be stepping in right now. And that's literally what he was doing. And he was bringing me back to that he was that anchor that was bringing me back. And that's why I really feel like, you know, that along with my position, and, you know, and it was just such an internal, it was such an internal feeling that I felt so connected to the divine through my child, you know, and that visualization of, you know, every time I was exhaling, I was, you know, opening up my vagina, which is like a flower. That's what I was imagining, this upside down flower that was opening every single time, just slightly a little bit more to let this little person out. And in my mind, you know, I could see pinks and golds and lights and whites and all these different colours that were really helping me to imagine this little person coming into the world who I want to raise and you know, serve humanity. And that my job here was so small compared to what potentially this little person could do in the world. It was you know, so I just feel like it can be this really divine experience that you can have as a mom, as a woman. You just have to believe in yourself, and you just have to train your mindset. And that's one thing I always talk about, the mindset around, you know, your capabilities.
Well, definitely. And I mean, what you're talking about also is the cocktail mix, we call it, in birth, which is the oxytocin hormone. When you're doing that deep breathing, what you're doing is you're sending a message to the nervous system that it's safe. And then it produces more oxytocin, and that mixes with the endorphins, which then internalizes the sensation of pain, but as power. And you're working with that, and so you're you kind of welcome what you're describing. You're welcoming the sensation because that's moving, as you say, your baby down out into the world. The trouble is, for some mums, if they haven't done the work, you know, sort of training the mindset, then when it comes to birth, then all they're going to feel is sensation. But that being said, there are times that even if they've done the work, if they don't have good support and they don't feel safe, then the mind will get into that primitive state, if that makes sense. And then they don't necessarily get up into that point. But it's not because they can't do that. It's because the environment that they're in possibly isn't supporting them.
Right.
So it's achievable for all. Of course, there's certain times medical support is needed, of course.
Yes. And we should be prepared for that as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I wouldn't personally be here if there wasn't a medical intervention. So we're not anti, so that's something else I wanted to get across as a doula, that we're not anti-medical support. We're just want you to have all the information so you can make your choices, so you feel empowered to make those choices.
Wow, I'm just totally amazed by that. Just sitting back and listening to the two of you conversing like that, I can just imagine you guys one day on a stage somewhere in a room full of parents having that discussion and talking about it. But in terms of moving on now into the role of the partner, in terms of the role of the father, is there anything that you can suggest, where maybe some tips where we can help to support our partner? Because obviously it's a time of ups and downs, where a man can also feel very isolated as well, and not sure what's going on in terms of how the partner is feeling, and ups and downs along the way. And things that I've experienced as well, every pregnancy is different as well. And it's about having that knowledge and that experience. But more than that, the first time round, I think, where you're just both totally unknown. And also, like I said, the next time might be totally different, and you're expecting it to be the same, and referring back to those times and things like that. So it's just about suggestions, really, on anything that we can do to help along the way, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said there is, you know, completely what it is, that it's a transitional time for both of you, you know, and you're both on a journey, but in different ways. And often fathers feel like they've got to be quiet about their feelings, and, you know, it's important to bring some consciousness into the role of becoming a father, I think, antenatally, and being proactive. I think certainly since I've worked as a doula, I definitely see dads really becoming much more proactive in the whole antenatal phase. But like, guys really want to be involved, you know. So, yeah, just being consciously involved in the process, doing the antenatal classes, learning the breathing techniques, because this is what benefits you, right? Because your hormones also get activated, which a lot of guys don't realize. When you're in the labor room, you know, if your adrenaline's through the roof, you're going to spike her adrenaline. So you have to look after yourself also to help in that process. You're all part of that process. So doing the antenatal work would be really helpful. Also, dads often say that they feel
that they are isolated. Now we do have, there's a lot more organisations out there that are recognising dad's needs. So there's Dad Matters, that are an organisation that you can go to antenatally and postnatally. We're starting to see studies in dads as well, birth trauma. So we are starting to see that guys can be really involved in the whole process. In terms of hormones, that's always going to be that, you know, that's just understanding hormones. So I think practically reading around understanding hormones in pregnancy and having a read up of that will definitely serve you to not take things personally. To also then recognize if there is something, we talked about an antenatal depression, you know, it's okay to have a low mood, everyone gets that, but if it's prolonged, then, you know, and you're noticing that, so there's definitely a role to play for dads, and just joining in with whatever learning and preparation you can do, not only for the birth, but for parenthood too, like that fourth trimester, you know, understanding babies' needs and wants, and, you know, not going by what we're sort of taught from the TV, that, you know, women's waters break, they give birth really quickly, you have the baby, you go home, the baby cries, you feed it and put it in a cot, you know, that's kind of the image that we get. And then we become parents and we're like, no, that doesn't quite, you know, it's not like that at all. There's a lot more work to it. So starting to, mentally prepare.
Like you said, that drive through delivery that we see. Absolutely. What you said was on point there, the preparation and the education as well. And I think the presence is important. And from my experience, like you said, you're not going to know everything and things like that. But just from a human perspective, even if you can't do anything, something that's always helped is that I'll always, I've spoken to Nav and say to just ask her how she's doing. Yeah. Even if I can't do anything about it, I'll always just kind of just ask, just to see what's going on, and not take it for granted that, you know, she's managing this all the way through, and then all of a sudden I'm just going to be there on the day to support her in that. But you mentioned the fourth trimester, and there's a thing where we focus on, you know, the first trimester, second trimester, and third trimester. And I hadn't even heard of the fourth trimester before until I think it was yourself who had the chat with her about it. And it was kind of just something that just come from nowhere, because I was under the impression, like most people are, that you just had the baby and, you know, that's it, let's just get on with things. But, you know, that education for me of the fourth trimester was like, that was really pivotal, of knowing that, okay, she's just given birth now, and, you know, we're not back to normal straight away. It's going to take time on it. But why do you think that we don't know about this kind of stuff, and there's no focus on it at all in the mainstream? And how is it that we can kind of embrace that time and kind of practice it and kind of, you know, develop during that fourth trimester?
I think it's just vital, isn't it? It's just that we kind of fell into this 6-week recovery period that's nonsense for the mum. And also we just don't factor that this is a little being that we're having that's been perfectly cocooned in the womb, being cuddled in the womb at the perfect temperature, the perfect sound, you know, and this little being has come out into this vastness, and there's no water, so it's got gravity around, you know, this baby's got to acclimatise to life outside. We call it Earthside, you know, the baby Earthside. We're just so much, because we're not so much in consciousness now, are we? As a society, we're on our phones, we're so distracted. We're kind of forcing everything along, when in fact it's an unfolding and it's a transition. You've got to have the baby transition to Earth, and the mum has to transition into motherhood. And that doesn't matter if you've had your first baby, that's first baby, fifth baby, you know, that's still a transitional period of time. And then always looking from the baby's perspective. So if we think that the baby's just arrived on Earth,
all this sound, all this light. You know, the babies, when they come out, I call them, they're like an inward C shape, aren't they? They're all curled up and, you know, tense, and they've got their little reflexes where they jump out and so on. They're frightened and they need to be nurtured and held, and so they can gently, over those next sort of 12 weeks, they uncurl, don't they? And they start to smile and eyes open. You know, we see that in the timing of a baby's development. You know, the first couple of weeks, their eyes aren't hardly open. You know, you don't get a lot of eye contact, and, you know, and then all of a sudden they're here, in becoming more, you know, they're conscious beings, but they're coming into their own. So I think just being gentle with all of that, cuddling babies when they need to be held, you know, spending as much skin to skin time as you possibly can, feeding when the baby is requesting food rather than worrying about routines and all of this stuff that modern life is telling us already. I mean, it shocks me, some of the stuff that's out there, that sleep training at like 3 weeks, it's just bonkers, you know, baby doesn't even know it's here. And that's why babies want to be skin to skin. They want to be on mum, because mum's armpit smells like amniotic fluid. I mean, there's so much stuff going on for this baby transitioning into, you know, smells for the baby. The smell of your house, you know, the baby understands that smell. But if a visitor comes in and holds that baby, it can be really overstimulating for a baby. So you might have a baby that's really upset and we think it needs feeding. But it's not that. The baby's saying to you, listen, I'm not at home. I need to be with mum. I need to be where that smell is, or with dad, you know? So
that's amazing.
Yeah, the fourth trimester is really, really, it's a gentle landing on the other side for the baby, which leads into, which I know that you would want to touch on, is the 40 days after, you know, confinement.
Yes.
It all goes hand in hand, doesn't it? And the same thing, the mum's lost fluid, the mum's open and been carrying a baby for 9 months, and suddenly, you know, on the other side of that, we're expecting within 6 weeks to baby to be in a routine and mum to be, you know, snapped back together. And it's just, it's crazy, isn't it?
And the difference for this time for me was, so my mum and my mother-in-law were quite keen for me to have the 40-day healing process, which is practiced by a lot of South Asians, but not just generally by a lot of people from the East, culturally, you know. And I was really kind of dead against it, because I was just like, no, I can't do that. Life's got to go on. I've got to take my kid here. I've got to do this. And it's only after, you know, having my two children, and then, you know, when I've gone to have my third, that I was like, you know what, I really want to try this 40-day. I need to be completely healed and rested so I can be the best mum I can be. Unfortunately, with Gorbin, that didn't happen, because, as you know, he ended up back in hospital, which just happened to be, which we found out afterwards, because he wasn't, you know, I hadn't fed him enough. I didn't have a chance to feed him enough, because I had so many people coming and holding him. And that made his heart rate go down, and that made, you know, him spike a temperature and all these other kinds of things. And then we ended up back in, you know, we ended up getting actually admitted into the ward, children's baby ward, which was an awful time. And that made, then they said, you know, your milk's not coming because you've not been feeding. But no one was telling me this. I've learned this afterwards, because I hadn't been feeding him. And then they said to me, you need to give him, and then he didn't have any energy to feed when I was trying to latch him on. Then I ended up giving him formula, which they, you know, were pushing me to give him. I was told afterwards by somebody else, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you should have just carried on feeding him, because that would have made your milk come in quicker. And so I, you know, I learned my lesson from that. But I, so because of that, I wasn't able to have my 40 days. But with Sahib, again, you know, be careful what you wish for. I mean, I prayed for the, I did these affirmations for my 40 days so much that I ended up getting 3 months of lockdown. You know, and you know how amazing it was, Nat, that because I every time I got a call to say, you know, you need to come in for a hearing test, you need to come in here for this clinic test, and I was like, you know what, I'm practicing 40-day healing.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we'll come to you.
There you go, the space that it creates, right?
Right. And so they came to do his hearing test. They came to give him all these kinds of things that they were asking me to come into either the hospital or the clinic to do or have done for him in the first 5 days, first 10 days or whatever. They ended up all coming to me. And then we went into lockdown, and then I wish I was able to go out. But, you know, that's another story. But, yeah, that I really – but in that time from us, you know, my mum said to me, you know, if you really want to do it, let's do it properly. I said, okay. She goes, oh, you need to keep your body warm, including your feet. You need to try and avoid sitting on cold floors because, obviously, you know, your vagina, your body's been open. You need to be eating a lot of hot food. So she was making me what something we call fungidi, which is a combination of like nuts and raisins, and it's like Indian sugar, type of sugar, and it's all very grainy. I'm sure you've seen it before, tasted it. And so, you know, trying to eat that as much as possible, and just eating a lot of really healthy, warm foods. And avoiding, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, we are told to avoid, like caffeine and all these kinds of things. And I do feel like, I mean, I know I had a good birth and I know I was up and about straight away, but inside myself, I did have a lot more energy, more than all the other kids straight away. You know, I'm on this fitness kind of kick now where I'm really, and I think it's because I really did rest my body.
Exactly. Really did. And that's it. That's what it's about. I mean, I know there's a little pushback. I have a lot of clients from all over, and parents coming over, you know, from China and Singapore to do confinement, and they kind of don't want to do it. But they are the clients that are up and are back to normal within 6 months and have got high energy and then have another baby later on. And you really see the difference than mums that are trying to push themselves out. I mean, I remember doing one of my walk and talks, and there was a girl there that had a baby 3 weeks ago. And I was horrified. You know, I would never tell her not to be there. But it was like, oh, gosh, I really want to just pick her up and take her home and put her on the sofa and give her something to eat, you know, because this need, this rush to be back to normal, it doesn't create any space for the healing. And I mean, within 6 weeks, what we're talking about in the West is that, you know, your blood volume goes back to normal, and your organs, you know, they all shift around, don't they, in pregnancy. So they're all sort of back to normal, and that's it. That's the only thing that's back to normal. Your emotions, your skeletal system is not back to normal. There's so many, like, you're still prone to injury, like you were in the latter stages of pregnancy because of the relaxing. That's still quite high postnatally. Yeah. So all of these things, I mean, we can cause ourselves real ill health.
Yeah. And,
I mean, I love Ayurvedic medicine. I really believe in the system of heat, and that makes so much sense to me, that you've had all this heat for 9 months and now you're completely depleted. So, yes, you know, that's why the hospital food that they give you, that sandwich, that cold sandwich, it's like, we need to wake up and be giving women after labour, you know, a soup or, you know, a broth or something that's going to support the system.
Right.
You know, but we're not there yet.
My mum would actually come the next morning. So by the time I got to my room, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. And then the next morning at about, and I, after every child I've had, I've never been able to go to sleep that night. I've always just sat there, prayed, meditated, looked at them, yeah, been thankful, had gratitude. And so by the time my mum came, it was like 9 o'clock in the morning, and she had bought me like an Indian curry soup, and she was like a dal, but the soup of it. Yeah. And, you know, she was like, you know, you need to be having this every day. You need to be having warm foods. You need to be wrapping your body up, which is obviously something, you know, closing of the bones is something that I can't. I was due to have my closing of the bones when I found out I was pregnant, right? This lifetime with you. So hopefully, when all this lockdown business is over, and the COVID and what life is, whatever it's going to look like, I'm hoping that I'm able to book my closing of the bones with you.
Yes. Again. There's no limit on that. I mean, I can still have closing of the bones, and I've got a 17-year-old. You know, it's something you can energetically have for the rest of your life, you know. So you're definitely owed a closing of the bones.
How Do you feel that mindsets are changing? Because like with our third and fourth pregnancy, Sikh Dad and I noticed that he was asked by the midwife or the health visitor how he was and how he was emotionally coping and how his emotional health was. So I was asked anyway, but then we've noticed the last two times, especially this time, like the last health visitor, she actually spent a lot of time with Capri talking to him. Do you think there is a change in mindsets now when it comes to mental health of new dads?
I think it's slowly. I mean, it's still an under-researched area, but it's definitely, there are more organisations springing up, which is great to see. Because like we know that PTSD, if you've been at a birth trauma, there's dads that have got that, you know, that are out there. And there are some really good organisations that are looking at that. So I do think there is a shift. And just because there's more dads, you know, when I'm a 70s baby, I shouldn't be giving my age away, but at that time, dads didn't come into the labour rooms. You know, dads, it was okay for the dad to be down the pub. It was kind of normal. And that shifted. And dads, like I said earlier, dads, you know, I've got to say, you know, working with families, dads are really proactive now. They want to be involved. And so as a result of that, because sometimes, you know, parents, as we've touched on, are not getting the education that they need antenatally, what that is then starting to, it's a bit of sweet, isn't it? Because it's starting to bring dads into the fore. But then if they're not well prepared, can impact their mental health. I was working with a dad, funny enough, yesterday has got, you know, I would say he's got PTSD. But yeah, it's opening up that now that dads are being impacted, you know, with trauma and things. So yeah, I do think that we are starting to see that questioning. I don't think we're there yet. I think we're touching the surface. I don't think we're there yet with women, with mothers, you know, let alone dads. But I do think those boxes are on the forms, put it that way. they just need to be a bit more, you know, they're quite superficially there is what I'm getting at. You know, I think there'd be a lot more work needs to be done for both. Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. Like you said, there's still a lot that needs doing, and there's many things out there, like you said, have not been researched properly and given the time that they deserve. But like I said, it is a good start, because for me, just I wasn't even expecting it, like, to be asked. So that was really cool for me. Like, our midwife had just, all she said was, "How are you doing?" It was as simple as that. And I was like, wow.
You made a joke of it,
yeah,
didn't you?
I was like, wow, someone asked me. Like, inside, I was like, wow, like, I exist. Like, it felt good, because then I was like, and it was good for me, because third time round, I thought it was going to be really easy. Yeah, because I thought, you know, I'm experienced in this and X, Y, and Z, and, you know, the transition from one child to two is where it's difficult, and three is just, you know, it's, you know, business as usual, let's say. But third time round, I was absolutely exhausted, like, to the point, like, for a month, I was literally just standing up and falling asleep.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was just, like, because I was just so, you know, not prepared for it, in that I thought it would be easy. So when she actually asked me and just said, "How are you?" Yeah. I was like, wow, like that really helped me.
That's so important, isn't it? It's important to be validated and know that you're part of the journey and not just ignored, which I do feel sorry for dads a lot of the time, because they are kind of just left in the background, and they're going through a lot of transitions, a lot of change. They're supporting the family, they're keeping their emotions to themselves, and, you know, carrying a lot. So it is, I agree, it's total progress to see. So let's hope that it deepens deepens and it gets wider, the support, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I feel that, you know, not only have you supported me, but you have supported Gurpreet as well. You've had many chats with him when you've been over, and, you know, and anything that you've spoken to me about, like, we, as you know, Gurpreet and I have a very open relationship. So, you know, we do talk about, you know, conversations that you and I have had, and many times he's been like, oh, wow, oh my God, you know, that is such an something so profound and important that you've shared with us that's helped us in so many other ways. And so there is change there, but I think what you offer as an individual is really priceless. And you know, you're making huge impact and sending such positive energy out into this vast universe of ours through supporting all these women and their partners and their babies as well. I mean, I know you probably don't really want me to say this, but I know that even after babies are born, you're going to those mothers' houses and telling the mums to go to sleep, and you're hoovering their houses, you are washing their dishes, you are cleaning up for them, you're doing things, you're doing this seva, as we would call it, which, you know, is really hard to come by. And you know, we just feel so blessed that you've been a part of our journey and will continue to be. And we just want to thank you again for joining us on an amazing podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been an honour to watch you guys anyway. I mean, I love watching your Instagram stories. It's just, what you're doing is amazing. So, what you're doing, it's really impressive.
Thank you. I feel like my confidence and how what I share with mums is just a direct link to whatever you've given me. And so, you know, it's, you know, that exchange of energy. I was talking to the kids yesterday about, you know, money being energy and you know, our thoughts being energy and good and bad, whatever it might be. And I feel that this exchange of energy that you've given to me is, you know, it's only my duty now to go and give it to others as I can, and just empowering them. So thank you everybody for listening. We hope you've enjoyed. If you have any questions for Natalie, please do contact her. She's on Instagram and Facebook as Mother and Bump. And also you can check out her website, which is www.motherandbumpmassage.co.uk. You are only servicing people in the South East and North Kent area, am I right, Nat?
Yes.
But I'm sure you would be willing to talk to people or do some consults online, and obviously that's the current climate at the moment. So if you do, and to the dads out there, if you would like to buy a gift voucher for your wife and end up having this amazing relationship as we did, you can also get them on the website. We really appreciate you taking the time out for us today, and well, we wish you well and keep safe in these times.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.